Okay, and we are live, Friday Night Field! Another week, another week! All right, welcome everyone. I am licensed mental health counselor, Patrick Monette, and I'm so excited to join with you tonight in Friday Night Feels. Just a reminder that if you can't watch the show live, then you can catch it on the YouTube channel and also on all podcast platforms. So Friday Night Feels is a show that I created in March 2020, and it has really become an amazing adventure of meeting people from all across the globe who come on the show that I am honored to meet, who share their stories, their businesses, their products, their journeys. And usually it always has something to do with helping others, which I really love. And tonight I'm so excited. We have the amazing Jillian Lama, who is a master certified life and weight loss coach and founder of the Body You Crave Method. She helps people end emotional eating and lose excess weight, eating the foods that they love, no cheating required. In her spare time, Jillian loves teaching body pump, chasing her one-year-old son around the house, and watching episodes of The Office with her husband. So Jillian, welcome to Friday Night Feels.
Hi, thank you so much. It's so good to be here tonight.
So Jillian and I were just talking, and I've had this conversation before, so I just had to make this confession to her before we started, is I've actually never seen The Office.
Yeah. No, it's so funny. I was actually kind of opposed to it because I think I watched an episode or two in college and I was like, this is not funny. Like, I don't know what everybody is freaking out about, but this is a really stupid show and it is not funny and it's a complete waste of time. And so I didn't watch it then for years and years and years. And then my husband finally, and I did, and somebody did tell me like a couple years ago, after you've worked in an office or you've been in a certain environment, it's a lot funnier. And okay. So I was like, okay, well, that's fair. And so my husband and I started watching it towards the end, either the end of last year or early this year. And yeah, we just kind of got sucked into it. And I was like, oh yeah, no, this is really funny. I don't know which episodes I saw or like what part of the episode I saw, but no, this is hilarious.
It sucks you in. Well, I always love reading people's bios because I always learn stuff about them, but also what I'm missing in the world. So you're not the first right. person. You're not the first person to tell me I'm missing out on not watching The Office. So I will definitely put it on my watch list.
Yeah.
So this is so amazing. There's so many great things that you offer. Why don't you start and tell us a little bit about your story and how you came to be this this expert in helping people lose weight and really create the lifestyle that they want.
Yeah, absolutely. So this really stemmed from my own personal journey. And really, it was quite a struggle for many years with food and my weight, with body image. And so I actually recently wrote a book called Body You Crave. It's a 60-day food and self-love journal and planner. And so it's all around how do we not just manage our food and healthy habits like sleep, water, being mindful of when we're hungry and satisfied, but it also goes into some of the deeper things and some of the self-love topics and really thinking through like how can we show up and be grateful every day? How can we change the way that we think about ourselves? How can we make a 1% improvement and feel like that's okay and that's good enough and it is going to get me to the goals that I want? I probably grew up just always being aware and attuned of my body shape and size. And so in this book, I share, it's part book, part journal. So in the mm-hmm. beginning, I share more of my story. And from the time I was 7 or 8, I already had a kind of this awareness around my body size and whether I was bigger or smaller than other people. And so when I was 10, we moved from California to Ohio. And then 2 years later, my sister and I flew back to California and my grandmother picked us up from the airport. And she was saying, you know, just kind of raving like, oh my gosh, Jillie, I can't believe how skinny you are. Look how skinny you are. Like, I can't believe it. And for somebody who, as a child, kind of being aware and conscious of my weight and was I skinny or thin or pretty or liked or popular or like these things were starting to pick up, instead of feeling good and proud of like, ooh, I'm skinny, it was, oh, I must have been fat before and that was bad. And right. So there was, you know, my mind was just trying to make sense of the world, you know, just really just how we're downloading and absorbing everything around us until what, like 7, 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And then we start to kind of socialize and look at, you know, what are other people doing? How are they responding? But we're really picking up, yeah, what's good, what's bad, what, how are we accepted? What means that we are enough or we're valued. And so I put a lot of emphasis on my body, on my weight, on getting good grades in school, on being the best soccer player, on scoring the most goals, on, you know, these different accomplishments, because for me, that was like how I earned somebody's love was mm-hmm. through these external things. Right. And so my weight, I didn't actually start kind of like dieting and purposefully trying to lose weight until probably like junior, senior year of high school. So it was okay. later teenage years, 17, 18, I had lost weight, doing more of a low carb diet with my parents, who were, you know, doing a diet and just kind of like following their eating plan. And then gained weight senior year of high school, probably gained like 20 pounds within 6 months. And so I was way too thin to begin with, but to gain that much weight in a very short amount of time, and then to have comments like, "Oh, you look thick." And right. I'm like,
or what happened?
Fat, like
right, thick. Like, oh my god!
I know. I'm like, oh my gosh! I need to go run. Or like my grandmother when I was 21, she was like, if I didn't know any better, I'd think you were pregnant. And I was like, oh, this is absolutely the worst thing ever. This is living hell. Somebody thinks I am pregnant and I am not. Like, right. This is really bad. So it's like these little comments just kind of snowball over time, and so in throughout college, for the first 3 years, I really wrestled and struggled. I just kept trying to low carb harder and run more. It was just eat less and exercise more, because that's what we're taught is how we're supposed to lose weight. We're taught that carbs are bad, that sugar is evil, that these foods are toxic. And I'm not saying that we need to go out and binge on them, but I definitely was not creating a healthy relationship. And so that's ultimately what I learned after years and years throughout my 20s, really just trying to punish myself with exercise and punish myself by taking away food. It really brought me back around to this place of realizing I was emotionally eating because I wasn't managing my thoughts. I wasn't managing and like just accepting and being aware of the emotions and everything that I had, mostly about myself, about where I was in life, about, you know, maybe a job or a business or a relationship, how my marriage was going, different things like that. But I think my emotional eating also stemmed from just chronic dieting over the years mm-hmm. and this chronic restriction of like all in and all out, good versus bad. You know, I'd get to Wednesday, I wouldn't eat on, you know, it's like 3 days in a row of not eating on plan. It's like, well, screw it, I'll start again on Monday. And I know we've all had those moments where we're thinking, you know, even with Halloween coming up, it's probably like, all right, Sunday, screw it. I'm just right. gonna eat whatever I want, right. eat all the candy. Right. I will start on Monday.
Yes.
Right. We're going to yep. get it together. But you're still going to have candy in the house. So yes. like, let's not pretend that, that we're just going to like all of a sudden turn on a dime.
It just and disappears. So
right. Exactly. So it was really this process of after becoming certified as a life and health coach, I started doing more work on myself and feeling like, well, I need to be in alignment and living and walking my walk. And if I'm going to tell somebody to do something, I need to be practicing that too. Mm-hmm. And so there were several months where I felt like, something was wrong, because here I was, I looked good on the outside, but on the inside, I was still like at war with myself, at mm-hmm. war with food, at war with my body. I would also eat ice cream, and I felt like, well, who am I to be a health coach teaching people how to be healthy when I'm eating ice cream like almost every night? Like mm-hmm. there's something wrong here. And so it took several months, if not even like closer to a year, of really working on my own relationship to food, working on my business, and talking with different coaches where they're like, hey, this is actually a good thing. The fact right. that you eat ice cream and it's okay, it's not bad. You don't have to binge on it. It can be part of a regular, normal routine, and you can still look as good as you do. Like, hey, that's incredible, you know? Right. And so it just kind of, it's really evolved and morphed over time, but really just stems from where I lived for so long, which was hating my body, thinking that I needed to punish myself by running extra miles or taking away food. And it often was, you know, I'd overeat at night when, you know, sometime. And then the next morning it would be like, okay, no carbs, no sugar. Today's going to be the day. And then by 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm like, well, maybe I'll just have a little bit of chocolate. Right. Well, this protein bar, well, this is low carb. So like, this is okay. And then by the end of the night, it's like 3 low carb protein bars, some low carb ice cream and popcorn. And, you know, like these other things later, it's like, oh, hey, you know, let's start to break this cycle.
Right.
So that's really what my mission is to help women create a healthier relationship to food and body. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to lose weight, but let's change the way that we do it. Let's change the way that we talk to ourselves all the way down the scale and stop thinking that thinner is better and thinner. We're just magically going to start thinking and talking differently to ourselves, because that also doesn't happen.
Right. And it must be difficult, because I know as a man, I have received different messages my whole life because I've struggled with my weight. So I can only imagine. I've seen other women that I've known go through it where it's excruciating, and it's that damage of, I can't enjoy a family meal because I'm going to punish myself for it, or I can't enjoy this. Or even when you get to that, as you were saying, that external vision that everyone thinks is appropriate, as you said, you're still at war. So you're still in pain. And everyone, you know, sometimes people can judge you whether you're overweight or whether you're at the perfect healthy weight, because they that it triggers their own, at least for myself, it triggers that own insecurity of, oh man, I'm a failure because I can't do this either.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting too, because even though I talk a lot to women, men can struggle with emotional eating, with body image, with weight loss, with these other issues as well. And even though sometimes I think the way my husband has at least talked about it, it's like skinny is bad. You want to be jacked and muscular or ripped or shredded, or, you know, it's like, there's still a stigma. There's still an ideal body type or ratio, or, you know, like size or look, or there's still this idea of I should look this way, or I should be this way. Even though it's the specifics or the details might be different than what women are after, but there's still just as much of a pressure, I think, to look a certain way, to be a certain way in order to be attractive or, you know, sexy, or in order to like justify you feeling confident, or, you know, these other things.
Right. And one thing that I've noticed as I've, you know, gotten older too, is, you know, in my 20s, it was much more about the sex appeal, you know, what you hear and the pressure of everything. But now what I'm hearing as I've gotten older is it's actually more anxiety about the future. That if I don't change my body, and it's not just about the weight on the scale, it's if I don't, it's going to lead to diabetes. It's going to lead to high blood pressure. It's much more of a larger scale of, if I don't change my relationship with food, with exercise, I'm not going to be able to be on the floor with my kids. I'm not going to be able to be on the floor with my grandkids. I'm not going to wait to make it to retirement. And I don't know if you ever hear those stories or those struggles.
Yeah. So it was kind of funny. My father-in-law was recently diagnosed. It was earlier this year with type 2 diabetes. I'm trying to think of what month it was. I don't remember now if it was like April, May. It was sometime around the spring, early summer. And they had wanted to put him on medication. He opted not to. And he came back. He called my husband, Zach, and then he talked to both of us, and we basically suggested that he start to cut back. And it wasn't everything, but it's just, let's cut back on like some processed packaged foods and carbs. Let's cut back on the alcohol, you know, try intermittent fasting. So finish eating by like 8 or 9 at night, and don't eat, just basically skip breakfast the next day, don't eat until noon, like no Coca-Cola. Let's cut that out. You know, you can do coffee. And with that kind of a diagnosis, he was very motivated to do the work. He even started running. Like, this is a man that I was not expecting to be an exerciser, but he reversed his diagnosis with less than 60 days. Like, it was a crazy turnaround with just a few minor lifestyle changes. And it was really interesting and kind of disheartening too, that he went back to his doctor and shared this, and his doctor was like, wow, that's great. But then instead of looking at, well, tell me more, what were you doing, and thinking, how might my other like patients be able to use these tactics or use this approach? It was, well, you're the special unicorn. You must have these special genetics, and somehow you were able to do it, but it didn't actually change. It's not going to change the medical like, worlds. You know, world in right. terms of how we're actually treating different diseases. So it's one of those things where it can be kind of challenging to, because we want to trust doctors. And I think in many cases we do, but they're also trained to like treat and diagnose. And a lot of times it looks like providing pills, providing medication. And so we've got to find this balance and really look at what other options are out there. And sometimes I think medication is absolutely necessary, mm-hmm. but we can also supplement that with lifestyle changes. So like mm-hmm. even things like getting better sleep, staying hydrated, getting at least half your weight in ounces of water every single day, eating more real foods and less processed. It doesn't mean we have to do this whole 30 where like, it's never can I ever. It's let's start to manage and do a little bit more of this over here and a little bit less of that right. over there. And that helps to keep the binging at bay because we're not restricting. We're not saying this is off limits and I can't have it and I'm bad if I do.
Right.
So it's really about that balance. And now how does this it really impact my health markers and specific things that I'm after? I've got a few clients where diabetes runs in their family. And so they're very conscious and aware of the fact that this is real, that they've had family members die from it. It's something that they want to be like, they want to keep living another 20, 30, 40 years. So it definitely has this larger, like long-term impact, like you're saying, of wanting to be around for kids and grandkids.
Right. And I think that's so interesting is in the mental health field, I have a similar approach where medication is amazing and it can change people's lives, but mm-hmm. it's one piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And even with mental health, and that's why I'm so glad you're here with us tonight, because in the mental health field, we focus on emotions and cognitions and trauma. And I don't think enough of us talk about, at least in my experience, is about how are you sleeping? Are you getting mm-hmm. enough water? I don't think mm-hmm. clients mm-hmm. are used to having those discussions of like, no, I got my Mountain Dew or I got this. And, you know, all the different things right. that people drink of. And they don't see the connection to what I'm putting in my body can yeah. potentially be affecting my mental health and my emotional well-being.
Right, right. And I think a lot of times we have these excuses and justifications. We have permission giving thoughts like, well, a little bit won't hurt, mm-hmm. or it's only one or two, or, you know, I see, you know, a lot of times we over rely on coffee and caffeine. But we kind of justify it of like, well, yeah, sure. I open 4 bottles of soda, but I don't drink them all. You know, it's like, we try to reason our way and justify why it's an okay thing to do. And I think because a lot of times we're afraid, well, I have to give it up completely and I don't want to do that. Mm. And so I know that was a big thing for me with my whole journey was I worked with different health coaches. I worked with different, in different programs, memberships. I did group coaching. You know, I had a variety of different people that I tried and was really looking for how do I really solve this? Mm-hmm. And there were a lot that I felt like weren't the right approach. There were a lot that didn't work. There were a lot that quite frankly, like gave me bad advice or kind of plugged these thoughts that ended up not being useful. They were more harmful than they were beneficial. And so it's really just about how can we start to make these small incremental 1% changes, get 1% better. And like I said earlier of like, you know, not discounting that, realizing that, hey, this is good enough. Going to bed 10 minutes earlier tonight is good enough. It is worth it. And when we start to do that over time, then that's when we can get to bed, you know, an hour, 2 hours earlier. We can rise an hour or 2 hours earlier. It doesn't have to be these big extremes.
And I love that too, because I'm one of those people that are struggle where I put off going to bed because it sometimes it's like, I don't really want to get up tomorrow because I know I have a killer day or I know I have to do all yeah. those appointments. But I noticed it actually happened this week where I went to bed a couple nights, you know, I just got caught up doing things. And mm-hmm. oh my gosh, the next day, I just wasn't feeling well. And then mm-hmm. the third night I went to bed earlier. And like you said, it was just, my body was able just to relax more and I could, and then I woke mm-hmm. up and it was a lot better.
Yeah, it's really fascinating how much sleep impacts our mood. It impacts our mental and cognitive performance, how it impacts even the regulation of hunger and satiety. So when we get even one less hour of sleep every night, we are 30% more hungry and 20% less satisfied the next day, which means that we are likely going to be overeating, whether it's at every meal, we're snacking maybe more in the afternoon to try to stay awake. Maybe we're reaching for more sugary coffee drinks. You know, there's a variety of ways that that might look, but it has this impact. And so it's, you know, when we look at, well, one or two nights a week or out of the month, it's like, it may not seem like a lot, but it adds up over time. If this is happening multiple nights a week, every week over time. And so, yeah, having a young one, really noticing like not sleeping through the night for like, he didn't sleep through the night for like 8 months. I think it was July.
He wanted that quality time.
Yeah. Oh man. I was like, I had the worst memory. I couldn't like think through things. Like I forgot stuff all the time. Like it was rough. I don't know how, like, I don't know how I survived. I still slept, but it was so interrupted and broken that like the quality just was not there at all. And really what I wanted to do was like, give hubby the baby and just be like, hey, I'm going to a hotel for the weekend. Right. I will see you on Monday.
Yes. Recharge, rested. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it's like, we've got to start to realize how this does impact just all areas of life. And it really impacts my mood too. Like, and I'm sure you can feel it too, of like, we're more grouchy, we're irritable. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're angry. We have less patience, and it's not, you know, it's like, it's with everyone. It's all throughout the day. And then those hormones and everything don't reset until we go back to sleep that night. So like, we've got all day to try and like work through and manage
muscle
everything.
Through, yeah.
So.
Now, yeah. what are some of the things that you see in your experience? What are some common struggles that people see when they're not necessarily just losing weight, but with their wellness goals? What are some common struggles that you've come across?
Yeah. So one of the big ones I would say is consistency, is like maintaining consistent habits, consistent action. A lot of times it's easy to feel consistent when we are being rewarded with either the scale going down, maybe we're able to run faster or longer. When we're seeing these different results and this output, then often that kind of creates this internal trigger to stay consistent. Mm-hmm. But we can't be consistent if we don't have a realistic plan that we're following and can do long term. And we can't be consistent without also looking and addressing the mindset, which is all of our thoughts. So it'll be like fears, worries, excuses, justifications. And so we need both of those. Like, we need a realistic plan to pursue. So if I want to be training for a marathon, I need a running plan that's going to fit my goals and my needs and like meet me right where I'm at today and help me get to that. You know, if I was to, you know, try and have a 1 month like marathon prep plan to go from 0 to 26 miles, like probably not going to happen very well. Like that's going to be really, they have to willpower a lot through it. And because we aren't familiar with all of the thoughts that we have, so we have, you know, 50,000, 60,000 thoughts a day, something like that. So many of them are subconscious and we don't even catch them. Mm-hmm. So we have to become more aware and attuned of what are all those thoughts to not go for a run, to get this workout, to not follow it to a T. What are all the thoughts to, you know, eat these foods, to skip that, to go to bed later, to sleep in, to press snooze, to not drink the water. This is what we want to start to look for, is what thoughts are derailing us. And so when we can look at and start to identify, okay, do I have the plan piece? Do I have something that's actually doable, feels good long-term, like doesn't create any restriction, doesn't have me feeling resentful or bitter. And, you know, sometimes we start a plan and we're like, oh yeah, I can totally do that. And we get into it and we're like, oh no, this sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, nope. We've got to recognize that and take, like, scale it back and really look at, okay, how do I get to be just a little more realistic with my plan? And, you know, I think a lot of people have a hard time thinking, well, if I want to lose weight, I can't possibly put, you know, Cheetos on my plan. I can't possibly put ice cream on my plan. I can't, you know, like that's a bad food. So we first, like when it comes to food, we have to eliminate this idea that they're good on bad foods. And we just have to say that all food is good. and get comfortable without villainizing any food. Mm-hmm. That's often what leads to a lot of these screw it moments of, screw it, I already broke my diet today, I'll just start again tomorrow.
Right.
Like, tomorrow I can be perfect. Tomorrow's going to be the day. We have this perfectionist fantasy and we get this like dopamine hit thinking about like how good we're going to feel when we're perfect. And then we're not, you know,
then we wake up late or the alarm doesn't go off.
Yeah.
Oh, forget it, tomorrow.
Right. So there's a lot of things. So like perfectionism can really challenge us when it comes to consistency. Because a lot of times we have this thought of like, well, if I miss a day, I have to start all over from square one. You know, it's like, well, if I was not going to eat chocolate all month and now it's, you know, day 20, well, I ate chocolate, I blew it, I have to start back all over from scratch. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you just get right back on track and you keep, like, if you really want to like not eat chocolate the whole month, you just keep going. Like we don't have to use that as an excuse to binge and say, well, I blew it, there's no point in continuing. Mm-hmm. We don't have to use it as, you know, ammunition against ourselves. We just have to be realistic and we have to question our reasons for why are we pursuing this? You know, I studied abroad in Russia, in college, and, some people at the embassy there decided to run a marathon. And at first I was thinking like, hell no, I do not want to do that. But then I got on board because I was like, well, with that much running, I am bound to lose weight. I didn't lose a pound. Like exercise is not the way to lose weight. So it's probably the slowest, most inefficient way. We really have to like our body composition, like 75% is what we put in our mouth. Mm-hmm. So we really want to be aware and mindful of the food, but not just the what we're eating, but the how much. Like, am I truly hungry when I'm reaching for food? And am I stopping at satisfied? Where am I overeating because it just tastes so good? Right. Where am I eating because I'm bored? Where am I procrastinating?
What? I think you just identified my life. Yes.
And, or where am I trying to make this task better? I remember having a job where I had a similar desk set up and I would get a task and I'd be like, ugh, like, it's not like it was a bad job. I just wanted to be doing something different.
Right.
And so I'd be like, all right, let me spin around in my chair, pop open my snack drawer. And I'd be like rummaging through chocolate and nuts and this and that. I'm not truly hungry, but I was like constantly eating.
And that's stress too.
Yeah. Right.
Can be a killer.
Really just looking at that, at these other pieces, which I started off talking about consistency, but like all of these things are really woven in.
Right.
So, but consistency is a big piece of like, how do I stay consistent? And a lot of that is we've got to end the war with food. We've got to stop thinking of food as good or bad and actually create a plan and get intentional and allow all foods. We have to be really aware of, am I truly hungry when I'm eating? And the best, like the number one easiest way to do this is to just ask yourself, am I hungry? Mm-hmm. And that might start with an alert on your phone. It might be a sticky note. You could put little, like I used to have sticky notes on the fridge or on different specific like items, like if it was on the ice cream or on the cookies, especially as I'm learning to have this healthy relationship with it. I don't want to exclude it and not eat it. I want to have it around and practice. How do I have, you know, one or two servings and have that be enough? How do I practice eating it out of a bowl instead of just out of the container with a spoon? And then, oops, now I've eaten the whole thing.
I feel like you've been spying on me, Jillian. I'm feeling a little anxious. Well, the peanut butter,
yes, the peanut butter. Oh my gosh.
Why does my tablespoon look ginormous in my mind, and then you actually measure it, it's quite small. I never realized with peanut butter how easy it is to overindulge, because it's just peanut butter, it's protein, level, it's no, Patrick, put down the straw.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is when we look at the nutrition facts, peanut butter has roughly 3 times as much fat as it does protein. So in my book, peanut butter or nut butters are going to count as a fat. Fat is good. We want fat in our diets. We just need to be mindful that we're not trying to convince ourselves that it counts as a serving of protein when it doesn't. So it's like 5 to 7 grams of protein. So you would need 3 to 4 servings in order to meet like your nutritional amount of protein that you need. So you're getting a lot of fat for that. So it just, and everybody's body is different too. Some people can handle that. My body is not so much. And I used to eat peanut butter like out of the jar with a spoon. I'd mix in a little protein powder, right? Like make it a little bit better.
Oh, hey, right. I love that idea.
It was like sweet and yeah, like, oh, it was so delicious. And I would just like eat it with a spoon, but I was emotionally eating. Mm-hmm. And then I also had these cravings at night, a lot of times for peanut butter, because I was trying to cut carbs and I was trying to cut calories and I was still running. I probably like 5-6 miles a day. I wasn't fueling my body properly because I'm trying to do this like massive restriction. And so I'm never getting anywhere on the scale because I'm always overcompensating at night. I'm always eating and snacking, and a peanut butter was a big one. And it's a source of a lot of energy. So it's a high energy food, which means that like it's easy to have cravings for it. So it's funny because I never liked peanut butter as a kid. It wasn't until after like years and years of dieting that I started to crave it. And like, I was like, oh, like putting all the pieces together. It's like, oh, this makes so much sense now. And now I'm at a point where, because it used to be where I chose not to buy it for a while because I wanted to, like, I needed some space where it wasn't there. And I didn't want to be focused and like working on that, like that relationship right there. You know, and so there was a time where I chose not to buy it, but now I've incorporated it back into the house and like, it'll be in the shelf or in the pantry for, I don't know, 6 months, a year, you know, it kind of comes out randomly. Mm-hmm. You know, might eat it with an apple or, you know, something, but it's really, it takes some time. And so there's nothing wrong if you want to like work and manage your relationship with something to say for this period of time, I'm just not going to buy it. It might feel like it's easier for you to do that. For some people, they are, you know, I've had a few clients where they're like, you know, I want to learn how to drink soda and just have one and feel satisfied. I want to learn how to eat, you know, 3 pieces of candy a day and like be good with it. I want to learn how can I have, you know, 1 or 2 pieces of bread and like be good and not eat the entire loaf because I'm stressed in the evening. And, you know, because I hadn't given myself permission to do all these things and I'm just, you know, talking about my to-do list that's never ending and never getting enough done. And, you know, all of these things.
Do you think that's possible when they set those goals?
Like what kind of goals? Like to just eat 3 pieces of candy or just have two?
Yeah. Even for myself, even when you say that, it's like, if I have a loaf of bread in the house, it's not going to last long. Cause I struggle with that. Yeah, so is that something, a realistic goal?
Yes. Yeah. So it's something that I work with my clients on very intentionally. So we all have a list of foods that we think we can't have in the house, we can't eat and still lose weight, that our bodies just don't like. And so we want to start to work on creating a different narrative. We want to understand where did those thoughts come from? And a lot of times, the foods that we're overeating or we're overconsuming, often it's in our minds, there's something bad about it. So we want to start to look at what are all those food rules that we're thinking? Is it that bread is bad? Is it that processed foods are bad? Candy is bad? Well, this is some kind of sweet or sugary food and therefore I shouldn't be eating it. We want to start to uncover and unwind all of those thoughts and really like identify where did it come from and then start to realize that the candy was never the problem. Like for me, it wasn't that the peanut butter itself was the problem. It was that I kept trying to restrict and cut and like over-exercise and under-eat all day long, that was really the issue. And so it's really working through this whole relationship with food and with diet rules and diet culture to create this healthier relationship with something like peanut butter or bread or other carbs. I used to be like, I was terrified of carbs. Like I remember when I was a nanny and the mom had made rice and she put a little butter and salt on it. And she was giving me a spoonful so that I could take a bite and like kind of taste it to see how the kids liked it. Mm-hmm. And I swear, like I clammed up. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to eat rice. And it was this teeny little bite. Like it was not a big deal, but in my mind at the time, there was so much anxiety of like, this is bad. I'm ruining my diet. This is horrible. Meanwhile, I probably would have gone home that night, ate 2 or 3 protein bars on my way home, you know, like had chocolate, had popcorn. I would have had carbs, but I'm still like afraid of them in certain forms. Mm-hmm. And so it's really like looking at what's our relationship to food as a whole. And then we start to practice. So we start to practice and we create a different conversation around it. So bread, for example, I'm now going to talk to myself differently about bread all day long. And let's say I'm going to have two pieces of bread with my sandwich. And then for dinner, it's going to be something else, right? And it's just learning, how do I manage these cravings? How do I manage these urges? And recognize that it's a lot of it's my thoughts. It's in my head. So I get to be in control of that. And I just get to get curious and start to see, oh, like last night when I ate four pieces of bread, what was I thinking? What was I feeling? What was really happening in the moment? What was really going on? Was I tired from the day? Was it a long week? Are there deeper, you know, like larger, bigger issues? Do I feel like I'm just like, I'm not far enough along in life? Am I not making enough money? Am I afraid of losing my job? Like, we want to start to uncover and get to these root issues that's really driving us to soothe with food. And that's how we create that healthier relationship. And we get better at not turning to candy out of boredom, we're tired, we're lonely, we're stressed, and actually just eating the candy because we enjoy it and dealing with the emotions and all of these different circumstances kind of on their own.
Right. And it's fast too. I can eat and it's fast and it takes the pain away for the minute, for the moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great coping mechanism, right? Our brain has learned like this is a rapid, reliable, effective way of creating a sense of relief. Like our brains are very efficient.
And it
learns quickly.
It's interesting too, because food can symbolize so many different things for different people. It can be like, I'm a stress eater when I'm stressed or emotional, I can do that. But I also know that I love to do it in celebration. I love to cook for other people. Yeah. I love to share that. I love doing platters and different things. But I also know that sometimes the narrative in my mind is, but I can't eat this.
That's really interesting. So I had a bakery for 2 years in Bangladesh. So from 2010 to 2012, this was a couple years after I graduated.
Are you going to come up with an autobiography? Because I feel like there are a lot of stories here that I really wanted. I'm holding myself back from asking, but go ahead. You have to come back. We'll have to do a whole other... what was that TV show, Behind the Music? Behind the Life Coach.
It's been a crazy ride. So we actually first moved overseas when I was in high school, and my dad worked with a non-governmental organization. And so we were literally dropped into this third world country. No one spoke English, didn't know any other Americans existed in the country. You know, it was very, very crazy. So it's been interesting ever since I was 15. It's been a crazy life, the reason I brought up Bangladesh though, is because, I was running a bakery. And so I did cakes and cupcakes. I catered events for the World Bank, United Nations. And then I did birthday parties and anniversaries and weddings and these other things. And that was a lot of what I told myself was I can make this for other people, but I can't eat it. And so a lot of people would ask how are you not, 500 pounds? How are you not, severely overweight? How is it that you still are as thin? And most people were surprised at how young I was too. And I would just tell them when I've got cake every day, it's not like I have to eat it all the time or I have to binge on it. I'm around it all the time. I can have it whenever I want. And while that was partially true, and there is truth in that statement, to me, the reality was I was terrified that if I ate the sugar or I ate too much of it, then I would be gaining weight and nobody would love me. And I would, it was this big, weight on that I carried, this burden of, I can't have that. I'm going to look this way. I don't want to. And it ultimately stemmed from the self-loathing and the shame and the self-criticism that comes when I was overweight. It wasn't that the weight is the issue. It's that inner critic and that constant beating myself up that doesn't end. And I don't know where that necessarily comes from, but I know a lot of us will pick that up. And that's ultimately one of the first and biggest things we have to work on if we want to be able to lose weight and keep it off, is we can't do it beating ourselves up. Mm-hmm. We can't think that, a smaller shape and a smaller size is going to fix a broken self-concept, because it doesn't. Right. So there's so much at play there, but I wrestled with that too, I can make this for other people. And it was kind of easy if it's a cake, right? People are going to notice if there's a piece missing. So, so that was kind of good, but cupcakes, cupcakes or brownies, there was still a lot of sweets and different things in the house. But it was all, I can't have this. I shouldn't have this. I started making my own like little homemade protein brownies. So I still had kind of like a sweet treat at the end of the night. So that was kind of like, you know, what I had, but ultimately it stemmed from, yeah, like this fear around food. And so it's interesting to like think 10 years ago versus today. And I'm eating vastly differently. Like today, we had, chicken and rice and vegetables, and there was like some cheese sauce on it. But like the fact that I'm eating rice and I'm okay with that. Like I'm good. And because I'm eating rice or I'm eating potatoes or bread, I'm now also like binging a lot less on sweets. I'm, you know, not overeating at the end of the night. I'm not snacking as much. I'm not eating as many nuts or peanut butter or things like that. So,
and you're enjoying time with your family, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah.
Which is what it's supposed to be.
Exactly. Right. And it's like, this is really what I want for people is, so I've started this, this kind of like theme is to savor the holidays because we do want to enjoy the food. We do want to savor our food. And that also means that we aren't scarfing it down, like in the dark when we think no one's looking. It means that we're sitting back and we feel relaxed around it and we can enjoy it. And we're also not trying to find all of our joy and pleasure in food. We're not looking at it as the highlight of our day. We're looking at it as I can enjoy this, but I'm actually going to enjoy the company and the people more. So it comes with a few like little thought shifts that we just work on. And yeah, and I think that's a great way to do it going into the holidays.
Right. And I love that. And I want to get back to that. There was just one other thing I want to jump onto that I was thinking about is everything that you were sharing of what your experiences were of, you know, that anxiety about carbs or fat or whatever it might be. It also sounds like you did that in silence, because that's not something you really can talk about, which then adds a whole other level of pain and mental anguish of not only can I not have this food, I'm going through this anguish and then I can't talk about it.
Yes. Yeah. So it that's absolutely right. It was something that if people ask me, it was, well, I just want to be healthy. Well, I just like running. I ran like every single day for years, to the point where like I would run on vacation in Thailand. I would run like, you know, my wedding day, I was running, honeymoon, I was running. Like I was constantly exercising because I had this like fear. If I didn't run for even just a day or two, I'd gain 5 pounds all of a sudden. Or, you know, it was instead of like, you know, kind of eating, people would ask like, how do you have so much willpower? And it was like, oh, you know, I just want to be healthy. Or, you know, if I want to like work out and exercise hard, I have to fuel my body well. And so it's like, there was truth to the statements, but deep down, there was just a lot of fear and anxiety around food that wasn't talked about. And I didn't, it was hard because I didn't want to go to somebody to talk about it because I was afraid, like, I don't know if I was afraid of what I would find, but it's like, yeah, I don't want to admit this to anyone. I don't want to admit it and then have the answer be, well, I just have to love and accept myself the way that I am, because that's not acceptable.
Right. Like, or that you're worse than you think you are, or it's more serious. It's really scary when you go and talk to someone and then you can't hide it anymore.
Yeah.
I remember one of the things that I talk a lot about on Friday Night Feels is my only experiences with weight and up and down and you know, like from a man's perspective and being in the mental health field. And I remember, you know, it's easy in my mind to put on weight because I can hide it or I don't see it or until, you know, all of that stuff. And I remember in one, I hosted an event and a year later, I hosted it again. And I remember someone said, oh, you look a lot healthier.
Oh.
And I took my breath away of, oh my God. Like I didn't even realize. I thought I was hiding it.
I
was so much heavier the first year. And it's amazing what you're talking about with changing the conversation and paying attention to it. Of one of my struggles is, I don't even recognize when it's getting out of control or when it's getting not out of control. Well, that's my wording, but also when it's getting to that unhealthy place where it isn't so much about the number, but it's all right. So there's diabetes in my family. Am I going to develop high blood pressure and cholesterol and all these things? It's scary.
Right.
And also knowing for myself that when I'm doing that, something's going on emotionally that I'm not taking care of.
Yeah. And I think that's such a great thing to highlight here is that when we can get curious and have compassion and start to see that there's just like a little mini me in there that's, you know, like, and there's some kind of unmet need, unmet emotion, there's some kind of fear or worry, or like there's often a deeper issue at play. And when we can really get honest about what we truly are thinking and feeling and accept it without shame or judgment, that's when we can start to move forward. But it's such a great indicator to see like, oh, where am I not talking to myself well, like all throughout the day. Things don't just happen in the moment, right? We've got to start thinking about like, how am I talking to myself starting when I first open my eyes in the morning?
Yeah, and it's amazing. And I love what you were saying too of about the holidays of, I wanted to go back to that, of changing that. And because I know so many of us, you know, oh my God, mashed potatoes, stuffing, and all these different things. One of the things, and I'm sure we could have a really fun show about holiday cooking. I realized when I was growing up, I think there were 7 main dishes, right? And 5 of them are carbs. I'm like,
right.
What is this? When we were too full from the mashed potatoes, the stuffing, and the gravy to have the salad, right? That's one of the things I've been working on too, that helped me is, as you were saying, it's a small changes of someone recommended to me of if you paying attention to how many fruits and vegetables. And I was amazed of how little fruits and vegetables I actually eat in my day. How did I become that adult? Because I like vegetables and fruit, but one of the things that I've noticed, which I'm sure a lot of your clients can relate to, is you're busy, right? And you're a busy mom and businesswoman and wife and runner and all these amazing things. And that all takes time.
Yeah.
And I think what I see in my work is the busy parent who not only has to go about their busy day, they have to prepare a meal for the kids. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they might eat the leftover food of the kid, or they might make these different meals and that stress too, because then they're not where they want to be.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You touched on so many things there. And it's time is like, we have to look at like our relationship with time. And a lot of us go through the entire day not having enough of it and telling ourselves that we don't have enough of it. And especially if we wake up late, we're hitting snooze, we get out the door late. And like, it's kind of this domino effect of like, we feel late and behind and we can never catch up. And that's something that we want to start to change and start thinking about time differently, but also looking at, well, how can we hack the system? Where can I buy pre-washed, pre-cut vegetables? You know, can I buy, there's like mini bags of baby carrots and like a 3 or 6 pack that you can buy a couple of those. And it's like, now you've got a snack, like that you can get a little hummus cup, you can get little ranch dressing. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care if you dip your broccoli or whatever in ranch, like just eat it, you know?
You know, they came out with chocolate hummus.
Yes. I have seen that.
It's delicious.
I have tried some. I don't know if it was the same brand, but I've tried some that was not so good. And I tried some other kind that was like pretty tasty.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a chocolate guy. So it's like, hello. Yeah. But like you were saying, so you could get the carrots or different things like that, dipping it in ranch would be okay.
Yeah. You know, like get stuff that's already washed, get stuff that's already cut, get the bags of lettuce that all you have to do is dump it into a bowl, steamable vegetables, get stuff that's pre-made, you know, go through the hot bar, get the ready-made, you know, different things that you and your family likes. I had one client who, she loves coleslaw. And I was like, you could eat it every day. Like, it's not like, we need to have a healthy relationship with all food. Like, I don't care if it's okay if there's mayonnaise, like that right now is not the issue. We want to look at, are you getting in some vegetables and are you truly hungry when you're eating it? And are you overeating? Because it's interesting. Like, Thanksgiving is often the one, like one day out of the year, maybe, where like everybody brags about how much they overate. And like, it's like a badge of honor and a symbol of how great the food was.
Right.
Rather than even like thinking about like, we could have a Thanksgiving dinner any day of the year, right? Like, I make a Thanksgiving dinner in like April sometimes. Like, I'll cook a turkey, I make stuffing, mashed potatoes, I'll do green bean casserole. Those are usually like our big favorites, but it's like whatever the big favorites are.
Right.
And And then we have leftovers for a while. And so, yeah, so I just wanted to touch on that.
Yeah, I love that.
But when it comes to, you know, time, we also want to look at, you know, can you get, you know, meals that, you know, can you have somebody where meals are delivered? Can you have like ingredients delivered? Can you have, you know, like, what are some of your different options? Can you do more meal prep? Can you pay somebody? Can you pay a college student maybe $100 on Sunday to like go do your grocery shopping or go pick up your grocery order, come back and like prep everything and cook a bunch of stuff for you? You know, like, it's not that it has to be this crazy thing of like, oh, I have a private chef and it sounds so fancy. And really, it doesn't have to be that expensive.
Right.
You know, you can find ways kind of around it, you know, and asking for help and tag teaming, you know, working with your spouse and saying like, hey, here's the menu. Can you make these three dinners this week? Mm. I'll make these three. We'll go out to eat the other night, you know, whatever it might look like. Or, you know, this night we do leftovers, you know, like really creating a plan and just being intentional with it. And then what you said about like picking after your kids' food, I see this all the time with moms, and it's this fear of, I don't want to waste it.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly throw these like half eaten chicken nuggets and like right. French fries away. Like,
right.
That is wasting food. That is wasting money. I better eat it.
Right.
And we don't realize that we waste food every single time we overeat.
Mm-hmm.
Every
mm-hmm.
single time we are eating more than what our body needs, we are wasting food. We're just wasting it in a different mode and different mm-hmm. vehicle. I'm wasting it in my body now instead of in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
So we can change the way that we think about that. We can also say like, it's not wasteful. Mm-hmm. We can also change how we see waste and also like have that compassion again of, we picked this up likely from our parents or our grandparents who picked it up from like probably going through depression era, going mm-hmm. through a time mm-hmm. where maybe they didn't have a lot of money. Food was genuinely scarce. Maybe it was, we go to the buffet and we eat our faces off because we don't know when we're going to eat again next. Mm-hmm. We've got to really look at what kind of trauma has impacted now this relationship with food. And what started as maybe a, you know, well-intended thought of like, clean your plate has turned into this, you know, like fear and like terror
and panic
throwing food away.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And I love that you said that, because there is so much, you know, when we talk about in the mental health field, when we talk about addiction, people's brains mm-hmm. minds usually go to alcohol or substances. We don't talk mm-hmm. enough about food.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's binging or restricting or all of those different things, and it's such an important part, I think, of our everyday life, good, bad, and neutral.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's your take on that? Do you think that you can be addicted to food?
I think you can be addicted to pretty much anything when there is a dysfunctional relationship there. Now, there's a huge difference when we're talking about anorexia or bulimia. And I think that mm-hmm. is a specialty that mm-hmm. I think it's not one that I specialize in, but I think it's such a unique niche that you really need to know what you're doing when you're doing that, because people's lives are really on the line in mm-hmm. those certain circumstances. But mm-hmm. I think if you're looking at it overall, the patterns of mm-hmm. when your life is run by the food, when am I going to do it? When am I not going to do it? Am I, you know, if there's that punishment, just like if someone says, oh, I can't wait to get out to have that drink, or I can't wait to pick up that mm-hmm. cigarette, or I can't wait to do that. When the substance or the behavior controls you, then you're looking at some addictive traits there that you want to explore.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, that's interesting. And I think this is kind of a tricky thing, because I will talk about sugar as well. And I mean, I don't think we're addicted to sugar. I think we can use it as a coping mechanism. I think there can be different qualities or different behavioral characteristics that might be kind of addiction-like.
Mm-hmm.
But like, most of us are not downing packets of like sugar, or, you know, we're not like stealing all the sugar from the, you know, Starbucks, you know, cafe thing. Like, it's more of the, you know, it baked into other things.
Right. It's hidden.
We're also yep. typically not, yeah, we're not binging on like apples and bananas, which have right. natural sugars, or yogurt, you know? So,
right. It's all different. So yeah, definitely.
Interesting. Just kind of looking at like, but we totally can be using it as a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. We can be using it to avoid negative emotions for sure.
Yep.
And just really, yeah, what does that relationship look like, and exploring that?
Right, exactly. Now, if people wanted to connect with you, what would that look like? I mean, because, some people, I think there's more and more evolution and acceptance about coaching, and especially with everything that you're presenting. So if someone wanted to reach out to you, how would they do that? And what would that process look like if they wanted to work with you?
Mm-hmm. So right now, the best way to reach me is online. So you can email me, Jillian@JillianLama.com. So it's my first name at firstlastname.com. I also have a website where you can learn more about me, more about my background, my approach. It's called Body You Crave. So I have a podcast called Body You Crave. So you can kind of like, it keeps it synonymous.
Yeah.
You go to the website, you'll find the podcast there. I'm also hosting a challenge called Savor the Holidays. So we're starting this 30-day challenge on November 1st. It's going to run through the entire month of November. And you can find out more about that at bodyyoucrave.com/challenge. And that's probably one of the best places to find me, to learn more about this philosophy, what I teach, how I teach it. It's not like, it's hard to put a label on it. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, it's not keto. It's not paleo. It's not necessarily intuitive eating either. But it's really, how do we change our relationship with food? And so, yeah, if this has resonated with you, then know that there's help. Know that there is a better way. Know that you can stop overeating, that you can stop emotionally eating, and that it's not a stain on your humanity, that it's just a habit that your brain has learned and picked up. And it's something that with a little bit of the mental work, right? I'm not talking about work like burpees and miles. And, you know, it's not about work in the gym. It's the mental work that's actually going to create this long-term, you know, peace with food and body that I know you're seeking. So yeah. That's the best place to reach me. And yeah, and I would love to chat.
That would be awesome. And what I love about what you do and the work that you're offering is it's helping to heal the shame cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying, I've been there. It doesn't matter what I look like now. I have been there. I know what those scars are. I know what it means to hate my body and to be there. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, whenever I connect with someone, it helps to know, it doesn't have to be the same because we all have our own experiences, but to mm-hmm. know that there isn't that power differentiation, which I've experienced with trainers, or because I'm not where you are, you're up here because you're better. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. I fail.
Mm-hmm.
But when I have someone who I see as a partner who says, you can do this. This is how we can do it. I love what you were saying, Jillian, of we need to create a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people just do it, at least in my experiences, I've just done it helter skelter. I'm going to get rid of this. I'm going to do that. But that's not how you live.
Right.
Because that's not taking into consideration holidays, going out with friends, ordering pizza on a Friday night. You know, that's, mm-hmm. you know, being able to enjoy that, but then balance it out with other decisions. Mm-hmm. So I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say too, like, I still will overeat and emotionally eat sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm just better at like finding it and like seeing it for what it is. I'm better at not beating myself up and starting to figure out and get curious as to why. I think it was just last weekend. I don't remember if it was Friday or Saturday night, but I remember thinking like, oh, you know, I think I just ate a little too much. Like, probably didn't need those last few bites, or I probably needed to pause and wait before having dessert. You know, like I needed to wait before, you know, having seconds, these little things. And so there's nothing wrong. There's no shame in that. I used to overeat every day. Like sometimes it'd start overeating at lunch and it just kind of just kept eating all throughout the rest of the day. So it's like, I've made massive, massive strides to where now the overeating or emotional eating, it is occasional. And so I don't want you to think that I am now like perfect, that it's never something that I ever have to deal with.
Yeah.
Like there's still cravings, there are still urges. You know, that's part of being human, you know, and it's okay.
Yeah. And I love that message. It's okay. And it's part of being human. I don't think we hear that enough, especially mm-hmm. with this. So one of the last things, and I'm so thankful that you were able to make time and come and join us tonight on Friday Night Feels. So one of the last questions I always ask my guests are, if there is one piece of advice that the people who are listening would walk away with, what would you want them to walk away with?
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, this is hard to like boil it down to one. So, I like the best place to start with this is to Before you eat, ask yourself, am I hungry? Get into the habit of when you walk into the kitchen, when you open the refrigerator, when you open the pantry, ask yourself, am I hungry? Now, if the answer is no, you can still eat, but at least get very aware and start to get curious as to, okay, what am I feeling and why am I feeling this? This is like the foundational piece as to what's going on here. If you are truly hungry, by all means, eat. It's not about vilifying food at all, but we just want to get clear on all those times when we're rummaging through the pantry, we're, you know, trying to find that last ice cream bar, you know, we think fell to the bottom of the freezer, or, you know, kind of pushing through things, trying to find whatever we, you know, whatever we can. It's really about like, how can I start to realize when I'm reaching for food and I'm not truly hungry? And so just starting with that, am I hungry question is such a great starting point. And when we can tune into our body's natural hunger cues, that's when we're going to start to see shifts and changes. Even if we don't change what we're eating, we can keep eating the same foods that you are today, and you will still see changes in your overall composition, in your health, in your weight, when we start to pay attention to our true hunger signals. So that's the best place to start. And no shame right. or judgment after an overeat, after an emotional eat. Don't beat yourself up. You might be thinking, well, I asked myself, am I hungry? And I said no. And then I trashed myself the whole night because I went and ate the Oreos anyways. Like, let's not do that.
Right. I love that. Yes. Yay. You know, no shame.
Just eat them. and then also commit to getting help. You know, like okay. get support, find a community, find a mentor, find a therapist, a coach, somebody that you can talk to, that you can work with and actually work on solving these issues, because it's just not something that we're taught when we look at mainstream diet and fitness culture.
Right. Thank you so much, Jillian, for joining us tonight. Thank you everyone for watching and for listening. And we will see you in 2 weeks on our next Friday Night Feels. Have a wonderful weekend and a happy Halloween. Take care.
Bye.